A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And in total honesty, I just burped right before we started. So if my voice sounds weird, I apologize.
Sounds weird or smells weird?
Okay. Well, so hopefully there aren't smells on YouTube. I don't want that. Nobody wants that. The ultimate adventure, life itself. Anyway, this is one of our questions of the everything. If you want to ask about my, you know, gastrointestinal system, you can do that later. That's just fine. This is a show where we tackle questions about Star Wars, pop culture, and really anything that people want to ask. We collect questions from our patrons on Patreon. Thank you for all the great questions. We got a lot still to get to, but we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend a book that apparently really does not need our help right now. It is Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. Is a great story of vengeance and love and Quinlan Vos and Asajj Ventress that people are really excited about. We love this book, and we would love for you to check it out on us. If you can check it out anyway, getting it through this really does actually help us. You can download that free Dark Disciple audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audio book. Ken, we also have an ask.
We do. We are asking you to consider supporting us over on Patreon. Patreon.com/4center is the spot. We're perhaps unlocking some new stuff, and you can make that possible. We're trying to set the goal of 400 paid memberships. That's right. Patreon's a little different now. There's like free. I got a few free memberships on my personal Patreon page the other day, and I didn't know what to do with that, but they're there. But paid members, we're trying to get to 400 at the time of recording. We're at about 391. So help us reach the goal. When we do, we're going to unlock Star Wars movie commentaries and then just commentaries and things. There's a lot of things we could do with this new system that got going on Patreon. But you can head over there and support us at patreon.com/4center.
That's right. And when we make it to that goal, we're going to actually have you vote on what movie we should do the commentary on. So the future is wide open. But what we do know is we're going to take some questions, starting with Ben Shug. Ben says, what has been the most successful animation to live action transition of any kind across all of Star Wars, from Boba Fett in the holiday special all the way to Ahsoka, be it a character, planet, ship, the Darksaber, or something else? This is a really fun question. We just this week did our big look at the future of animation and why we love Star Wars animation. And this is one of the things that's been exciting about it, is so many ideas and people and things jumping from animation into live action. Jennifer, was this question, did you have an answer right away or did you have to rack your brain?
I go in so many different directions because first I go Cad Bane. That was, I thought, a very successful, for me personally, transition to live action. But they Ben presents Ahsoka, which, yes, that is true. Boba Fett, which I actually, for me, is my answer. Going all the way back from the Star Wars holiday special to see this character become what it became and what I now I love Boba Fett. But I mean, and not that I never saw the holiday special when it first aired. But yeah, seeing that character make that transition all the way back from then to now, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. No, I mean, Boba Fett is hard to argue with. I can see somebody making the argument that, well, they were already developing the suit, so was he reverse engineered? Did he exist in the real world and parades and photos before the animation? But right. From the audience's perspective, yeah, you saw this weird, creepy guy riding a lizard with a thing we now call a pulse rifle, but and then he's this mysterious figure you can send away for on your Kenner toys, and then he explodes into live action in Empire Strikes Back. He's the OG from going to animation to live action, right?
Right.
Yeah. Ken, did you wrestle with this, or was this one where you feel like you had an answer right away?
I did have an answer right away. Then I wrote down, well, crap, the answer is Boba Fett from a certain point of view. It's kind of, you could also argue the character that transitions from a parade march to live action as well. and I think you're right, Justin, to point out the wonderful history of the character and when he was developed and showed up. But yeah, from the perspective of that weird thing on CBS to where we get him in Empire Strikes Back, that's probably the best example. But what I love is how that continues to grow. And in many ways, you could say he's made many different kind of jumps from canon or fan fiction theories and what happened to where we are now. So I'll put that one on the shelf, though. I then was going to be kind of cute, and I was like, well, Chopper. Chopper's the answer. But I'm going to pull back, and I'd love to celebrate and talk about Chopper. And I'm just talking about his Rogue One appearance, right? No, I really do. I think it's Ahsoka. I think it's Ahsoka.
Wow.
Because of where we are right now with the character, where the anticipation for the character coming to live action was, and even some of the controversies, whether it's the size of her head tails to the choice of the actor, with some real world things that popped up. Obviously, we could discuss if we want to, but also just the not Ashley of it all. It's the character has survived that stuff for the most part. Doesn't mean we can't talk about some of the issues there, but and to this success of the series and where we're at with it and going back to 2008, we just did that animation episode, but going back to Lil Soka, Lil Snips showing up and the hate, the vitriol, or just sometimes the confusion. Anakin didn't have a Padawan to where she is now. I think it's a Hall of Fame transition from animation live action.
Right, because when we were talking about things like, you know, the Darksaber, or even, hey, technically, you know, Mortis.
Yeah.
You know, if yeah. you think Anakin was in Mortis, or the World Between Worlds, whatever you think that space is. A lot of our conversation about this is design-based, right? Mm-hmm. But what you're talking about, Ken, and maybe what Ben means in his question, is the absolute spirit of the character mm-hmm. in a character that we met in animation as a young woman with very alien features, not meant to move around in live action. Shaak-Ti looked yeah. great and stood around.
Kneeled.
And the entire transition from her, not just aesthetically, but as one of the leading characters of Star Wars right now, one of the mm-hmm. faces of Star Wars. You're responding to like the hugeness of the, not just the design challenge, but of the character's prominence in Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I took this question of that full, what that means to transition from those two mediums and struggles with it and the passion behind it. You know, Ahsoka as a character outside of just the animations out of it, obviously grew to where there's an entire, dare I say, her universe around the character. and it was, yeah, to push through that to where we are right now. It doesn't mean it's perfect. Doesn't mean it's not detracted. Doesn't mean it's not things to discuss. I get that. But I'm blown away by that. And even though I have admitted that the series didn't hit me as much as it did other folks, I still pull back and just go, there was a couple times watching the series, I was like, this is crazy in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. That yeah. I'm watching Hayden Christensen with kind of the Matt Lanter approach, but Hayden making it very much his own. I think it's his best performance. Sitting there in the World Between Worlds, it's like there's some of the stuff where I was like, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah. Mm. Jennifer, how do you feel about Ahsoka? Is she a contender for you?
I really, yeah. I would actually go more towards Ezra, who I was like, how are they gonna pull this one off? Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a really, really great performance by Iman Isfandi. Mm-hmm. Really, really great because it's such a loved character. Bo-Katan is also another tricky one. Obviously, you have Katie Sackhoff, who portrayed her in the animated series, as well as live action. And initially when she appeared, I felt like it wasn't quite, I don't know, I was like, But then she really found her groove of keeping what she did with her voice performance with the live action. And I just loved that character. Every time she was on screen, I'm like, I can't believe this is really Bo-Katan. I love Katie Sackhoff so much. So it felt like such a triumph and such a difficult thing to pull off. And she did it so well.
Yeah, the transition of acting style is really an interesting element of the transition when it gets to be the same actor, like with Bo-Katan.
Because it is different styles of acting. It really, really is. And she nailed it because she's an amazing actor.
Yeah. How do you, Ken, do you estimate the success of a transition based on how, honestly, like, difficult it is? Like, Bo-Katan is pretty fascinating because obviously she's very stylized in Clone Wars. No human, we would all immediately perish if our bodies were forced into the Clone Wars shapes. It's a stylistic exaggeration. But it's the same actor, mm-hmm. and it's one of the closest. Just to like, there's not that much to change other than the normal human proportions that must mm-hmm. be changed. Mm-hmm. Whereas Cad Bane's like, okay, we need to make more visual differences mm-hmm. to the character. Are you more impressed by somebody like Bo-Katan, who, in my opinion, is much closer to what is in animation to Cad Bane, where like character kind of does need to be reinterpreted?
I think my instinct is to go to like the Cad Bane route, which is like, wow, you know, that was going to be impressive feat, and they got there, and I love it, and small hat and all. I will note that, and Jen, you kind of touched on it, like even, you know, without a doubt, Bo-Katan was designed to be Katie Sackhoff, cast Katie Sackhoff. This was coming post Battlestar Galactica. So it was cool to have Starbuck and Star Wars, like, Dave, without a doubt, in the team, like, it was meant for this. And so it is easier, but season two, her appearance, like, it was a bit of a weird stumble for me. Like, it didn't immediately connect to work. Didn't have the wig right. Like, there was, and she herself was, I think Katie was doing wonderful stuff, but it was like, But season three, that's how I analyze things. And then season three, I thought it was Pitch Perfect. So it's harder than you'd think. But to your point of just like the Cad Bane of it all, coming from Clone Wars, where you can have that, like, you get so used to that look, right? Mm-hmm. And here comes, you know, Lee Van Cleef on screen in Star Wars. That's not easy. That's not easy. And they did it. And they did that. So I think in the end I'll push towards that.
Yeah, I think for me, Cad Bane is up there because this is about adaptation. Animation mm-hmm. is exaggeration, and then live action is a different kind of exaggeration. But did they transfer the essence of the character? Was anything lost in the new interpretation? Mm-hmm. And the most important thing to me is live action Cad Bane is nightmare fuel. He's mm-hmm. terrifying. And it's the voice, but it is also just like the ferocity of him, like that sort of like that. Very still, but very just vengeful and no remorse. And that's like the character that did get successfully translated to me from the animation. So to me, it's just like, are his eyes too big? Are his eyes too small? Is the shade of blue right? Is the voice like a little bit different? Like that stuff is like, that's interesting to me because it's interpretation. What I care about is did the soul of the character come with him? Yeah. So I feel like it's the exact same character. Jennifer, what were your Cad Bane feelings? Did you feel like, yep, that's the guy I know from animation? Or were you like, who's this weirdo?
No, that's exactly what I thought. And I was surprised to see some of the criticism because to me, it was just Cad Bane in live action. Mm-hmm. I had nothing about it. But then everyone's like, oh, this and that. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I don't care about that. I just want like the essence of the character. And it's really tricky to pull that off. I actually, with the Purrgils, I still am not 100% sure how I feel about the Purrgils. I really liked what they did with the Purrgils in The Mandalorian. We just see the shadows of them. I thought that was really, really smart. Then when we finally see them in live action, I think some shots really worked for me and other shots didn't quite work for me. I don't know. I'm still torn on the Purrgils. I like that they went for it though. That I will say. I always want them to go for it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think for me, like the Chopper is pretty flawless. Like when you're like, hey, you.
It's pretty flawless.
Yeah. Look, that's an exaggeration. Like, no, I guess it's not. I guess that's.
Yeah.
The characters like droids were like, you know, you don't have to worry about, well, we can't make Bo-Katan look like that because there's no space for her liver and Bo-Katan's a human being, right?
Yeah.
But Chopper, you can be like, yeah, no, that's exactly
that's
it. Yeah, that's Chopper. He's up there. This is painful, but you know, Tara Sanube makes a pretty successful leap because he doesn't need to move around. He's just frozen as a sad frozen corpse, so he can pretty much just be nailed it, which is very sad.
Painful.
Very painful.
I really liked Hera. I know that there was a lot of discussion about the shade of green, the makeup, the everything, right? I really thought, and that was a credit to Mary Elizabeth Winstead's performance, which I thought she nailed it. I never once was distracted by the way that she looked. And that was something where with an actor like that, I think that's really important, you know, to not get hung up on the way that they look, their physical appearance. I just was so engrossed with her performance.
Yeah, I mean, I almost want to vote for Hera or Ahsoka because I do think the spirit of the character translated.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the characters were so beloved in animation, they could make the leap to live action and they would not have otherwise been in live action. And it just naturally pushes the boundaries of Star Wars of, I think to really invest in Star Wars, you have to be like, this is huge exaggeration. This is absurd in its DNA. This is Han Solo flying around with his dog, you know, but we emotionally invest in it. And is, you know, actors who have performed genre things over the years, a lot of Doctor Who actors have said like, yep, sometimes the sets were cardboard and the monsters didn't work that week and the lighting was terrible. And I just had to believe it so hard that everybody watching did. And so you can have the fun of the fantasy and still feel like this is real and I can connect with these characters. And I felt like Hera in particular really had that challenge. Here's an actor we know. Here's Mary Elizabeth Winstead, where if you sensed even a flicker of doubt or shame in her eyes, even a second of I'm painted green and crap's hanging from my head. If you sensed even a second of that, the illusion breaks.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she did such a great, phenomenal job of like, no, I'm mother. I'm a warrior. I'm a pilot. Like I am all these things and I need this so bad. She just played the hell out of the character. And that lets us have more bonkers fantasy because she supported it and believed it so much.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, too, about just kind of the Ahsoka series overall, taking all these Sabine and Ezra, as you pointed out, Jen. Like, they believed, right? And that's an important thing. I laughed when you said the Doctor Who stuff because I don't have any skin in the game, but the whole Madam Web promotion tour where like Dakota Johnson's in monologues going, green screen is weird. I don't know if you'll like it. Like it's just been this weird energy versus what you're talking about is, yeah, it was cardboard, but we believed.
Yeah, no, and it takes a great committed actor. Madam Web, man, I saw the trailer for that like three times this weekend, and yeah, that one's fascinating.
It shall be remembered, I think.
It shall be remembered. Oh, it might be one of those weird irony hits. It might be like the Cats of Spider movies where people are like, this is so weird, I gotta see it. But I think for me, I think Sabine is really up there. Sabine feels like an adaptation of the character. And I really love Sabine. She's one of my favorite parts of Ahsoka. But honestly, I feel like my honest answer is Ezra. I think it is a flawless transition because in his soul, it is both exactly the character from animation. His delivery is not an imitation, but it has his cadence. It has his sense of humor. It has his sense of fun. It has his sense of daring. So it's such a direct, perfect adaptation from the animation. But also, all of these characters, Ahsoka, Sabine, Hera, to different extents, Cad Bane, face the challenge of, but it's not a one-to-one adaptation of them from the time you knew them in the animation. It's also this character exactly as you know them in an entirely different time in their life. I feel like Ezra's, they entirely nailed that. This is the kid I remember who's now an adult who's been through weird hell that we don't even know. So he seemed exactly the Ezra I knew, but also the Ezra who's experienced everything he has.
The Ezra who should be.
Ezra who should be.
It's a really challenging performance because it could come across like he's really like winking at the camera or trying to be funny or trying to be kind of plucky and positive in like a very Disney kind of way. And it comes from such an organic place that I just was like, that is Ezra. Every time I was just, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. It's such great, great casting and a great performance.
Yeah, just great. And I think, Rosario Dawson has had a big challenge of a lot of what we relate to in the character is youth, plucky, optimism, can-do attitude. And she's not only translating the character to live action, but, middle-aged, bitter, disappointed, disconnected. It was a big challenge that I think she did well. So, we've all discussed lots of ones we like. Coming around for a summary of final answers. For me, at the end of the day, it is Ezra. But Ken, what's your final answer?
I mean, I'll stick with the big picture, but the Ezra of it all is you're both right. And because of what was going on in that show with the choices of the characters and that was intentional in the storytelling, Sabine a little down and out, Hera frustrated, Ahsoka doing what you, and then Ezra shows up and I was like, that's my guy. Like I needed that burst of energy. I needed that burst of energy and in my own life, not just the series. So I love that. But I think overall, stick with Ahsoka. I mean, look, Chopper is perfection. I think maybe it's Chopper.
Yeah, I'll Chopper. Yeah. And Jen, you sticking with Boba Fett as your primary answer?
No, never come around. I'd say the whole Ahsoka show is really incredible what they did making the leap from animation to live action. And I can't wait to see what they do next. I think they're going to push it even more, weirder. I'm ready for it, but
here comes Hondo again.
Hondo watch.
Hu Yang, man.
Oh my god, you're right.
Hu Yang is flawless too. You're right. Yeah, I am ashamed as a Hu Yang fan that I did not bring him into the conversation. But he's perfect.
Yeah,
having David Tennant there, helps a lot. And Anyway,
yeah, absolutely.
Extremely well realized. I love him in his Rock'em Sock'em robot fight that he has. All right. Any other thoughts before we take a quick break?
No, I can't. I can't wait to the next series of animation, the live action challenges and questions. We got Hondo indeed. Mieber guest gone soon.
Asajj Ventress, obviously, people have their fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. All right. If you're listening on audio, we're going to take a quick break. If you're watching on video, we're going to freeze briefly and be right back.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we're back. We love that question from Ben Chug. Got us thinking and talking about Ahsoka and all the great adaptations across the Star Wars live action shows. But now we're going to take a question from David Litchfield. David says, hello there, a longtime listener, first time cure. Please allow me to share my train of thought for context. I promise there's a question at the end. In your episode covering Dave Filoni's new role, you discussed his perspective of the master and apprentice lineage is a literal contiguous connectivity. It made me immediately think of the parallels in other pop culture. Take Doctor Who and the connectivity from one doctor to the next and how the relationship is somewhat reversed with each incarnation learning lessons from their companions. Another probably closer parallel is Avatar: The Last Airbender, where all previous avatars live within and inform the current avatar. Dave was famously a part of that classic show, and he is clearly connected to that storytelling lineage. Now, a real-world parallel is just this. There's a master-apprentice continuity in storytelling, either directly, as in Lucas to Filoni, or indirectly, like Lucas to Johnson, Abrams, or Favreau. All this made me think about the forthcoming Avatar: The Last Airbender live-action recreation. I struggle with this sort of remake storytelling, and I think it's because it is like a break in the connectivity in storytelling lineage. The Last Airbender led to Legend of Korra, and it was amazing. To retell an already existing and outstanding story rather than continuing to tell new stories within a world, to me, feels unnecessary and a missed opportunity to make something new and great. It stalls the connected progression of storytelling. Finally, the question. What are your thoughts on retelling, remaking versus continuing stories? P.S. I'm 100% in support of Who Center and even whooped aloud when Joseph mentioned that his favorite modern doctor is the same as mine, Two Hearts for Capaldi. Thank you for all these great thoughts and great questions. There's a lot to talk about in terms of that sort of a lineage of master and apprentice in storytelling, the way that's handled in various genre shows, but also your great central question about the value of retelling and remaking versus continuing stories. Ken, where do you start with this? Where does your mind go?
First, I have to admit, you started the show with a burp. I just got like hiccups and couldn't mute in time. Oh, so no. we'll see how this goes. Deep breaths. Here we go. I am also interested in the continuing of stories over remaking and retelling. It's a bigger conversation. I don't have a problem with retelling or remaking, but I just simply, and it's not a business decision. It's not a sequels, reboots, and remakes malaise. I think that does exist, and we should analyze that and discuss it. But in this particular instance, it's kind of what he's talking about here, what David's talking about. This, I just love the building out and the continuation of the story and the world, and mm-hmm. and I live in it. I talked recently how I watch a lot of these shows, and we discussed the big themes here in Force Center. That kind of leads how I engage with shows now. But I always just see it as this living history document. So if you take me off of that, I sometimes get a little frustrated or just lose interest. Comic books have their own kind of approach and their own kind of world. And this isn't, but as a casual comic book fan turned casual comic book movie fan, when I realized that, I totally get why Nolan's Batman isn't going to carry on. But when I realized it wasn't, I don't know, I'm going to stick over here. Right. And I don't even say that's right, but it's just that reaction like, but I want to see what happens with that guy. Versus what happens with a retelling or restoring. That's just my natural reaction to all that stuff there. Again, it's not always possible. And sometimes there's realities to it. Like I would love to see a Hitchhiker's movie, but I don't think I'm probably in a small camp of people who want to continue with the Martin Freeman, Mos Def, Sam Rockwell, Zooey Deschanel cast. I love that movie, and I wanted Restaurant at the End of the Universe. It flopped. It didn't do well, and plus passing Douglas Adams made that a little more difficult. But I would love to have that retold. So that's a different kind of set.
No, there is that sort of like a seminal story that some people love adaptations of, but there isn't a general consensus that people like, hey, if you're a Pride and Prejudice fan, I'm on Jane Austen this week. There are a lot of great adaptations and people squabble over which one's the best, and Hitchhikers, I think, is one where people, some people love them, but other people are waiting for that perfect one, which I think maybe relates to Avatar. I have not watched Avatar: The Last Airbender. I'm aware that there was a movie version, right, that I think was pretty generally disliked, is my understanding. So yeah, Avatar is almost to me in the Hitchhiker's guide camp of like trying to find one where the majority of the fans can be happy with this adaptation. Jennifer, where do you start with this?
Okay, I'm going to go in a totally different place.
Go for it.
I think that it can work to retell something. And I go to My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. That show is so great. And I used to watch the OG My Little Pony back in the 80s. This Friendship is Magic is fantastic, right? But then you have the new My Little Pony series and it loses its magic. So that's like the third iteration, right? So I think you have to be careful with the retelling. You can only do it so many times. Otherwise, it might lose its luster. Okay, here's another thing. Origin stories. I never saw the Willy Wonka movie. I don't want to see the new Willy Wonka movie because you already made a perfect Willy Wonka movie with Gene Wilder. I think Timothy Chalamet was not great casting, great actor, not right for this role. So I don't know. I really bristle with retelling. With I would much prefer a sequel. Origin story is kind of tricky. I don't know. I just want new stories. Just give me new stories.
Yeah, I think there's a hunger for the new, which we should definitely talk about. For some of the examples that that David's talking about, I mean, for Avatar, I get the frustration of like, I know, again, I haven't watched it, but I know people love Legend of Korra. It was a sequel that people seem to really love, and I don't know how that story ended. I don't know that world. I can understand, like, could we keep that story going? But, you know, again, that live action, if it's done well, might bring the story to more people and increase, you know, interest and discovery of the original animated version. So sometimes I'm like, yeah, good adaptation will maybe just make more people aware of the original thing. But then you guys are both pointing out, you know, remakes, retellings, adaptations that worked for you or didn't work for you. And I've mentioned this before. I think about this quote from a comic book writer. His name is Marv Wolfman. He wrote incredibly seminal, important stuff in the 80s, the New Teen Titans, which was the comic book that hooked me and will forever define my fandom. He wrote Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is still responsible for a lot of the multiverse storytelling that we're getting today, is because what Marv Wolfman wrote. Marv did a panel at the convention I go to in Minneapolis in Convergence where he was telling this story. He was like, I love comic books when I was a kid, but I'd read my Green Lantern comic books and I'd be like, I don't like that. Green Lantern should do this. So I wanted to become a writer so I could write Green Lantern the way I thought he should go. It's like, and now I've got all these writers coming up to me, like asking my permission. Like I'm the godfather. Do you like what I'm doing with the Teen Titans now? Do you like what I've done? And for me, it's like, don't you want to be writers to do it the way you want to do it? And that really stuck with me because I think that to me is the heart of it, of remakes, retellings that have worked are because somebody wanted, they loved something about the original and wanted to put something of themselves in it. I can't, you know, quote My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, but it felt like here's some of the core ideas and now a different perspective. John Carpenter's The Thing often gets listed in this of like, there. He had a different perspective. The 2000s Battlestar Galactica wasn't like a suit going, you know what we need to bring back. That was, there's a core idea in here that's a really fascinating, great sci-fi setup where we can explore all these things. We're not afraid to change anything. So I like retellings and remakings when somebody has that Marv Wolfman spirit of like, I love this, but I want to put my stamp on it or do something different with it.
I really agree that take. I mean, you bring up Battlestar, and I brought it up earlier, too. I love that version. I also grew up watching the first one, which is interesting. You know, Team Lauren Green to the end, I guess. And that's a great example of not just a retelling, but updating, right? Just My Little Pony is a great example of that. Kevin Smith's He-Man is the trinity that I like a lot of what was going on in there. I didn't finish the series, but that kind of like, we're not just going to simply reboot it. We're going to update it for the times, for us, for our vision. I like that. I do like that. I think that's a good point.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, is it coming from an artist driven place where like no one would think this is a moneymaker, but I want to do it versus I do. And I know this from experience being in pitch meetings where we have been in an era, maybe we're coming out of it, where IP sells and it isn't an artist driven thing.
Right.
I have had an opportunity a couple times for companies saying, we want to make a television show or movie of everything we own, whether people want it or not. So go down the list. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want it? Which is, that's different than an artist going like, I loved this weird, obscure thing. And it's deeply passionately what I want to do. You know, and I have no idea is this Avatar Netflix series like it's an incredibly popular animated series. I'm sure the artists working on it are trying their best to make something beautiful and, you know, great. But, you know, for me, it does make a little bit of difference of is it corporate driven or is it an artist passion project?
Exactly.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, that's a good example, too.
Yeah. I also... So that's kind of how I wrestle with some of the retelling and remaking. But I also think that a continuing story has great value. Obviously, you know, we talk about Star Wars. That's a continuing story. David mentions Doctor Who. There are two different times where Doctor Who could have, and I bet had pressure to be just like, just hit the restart button. Nobody's watching these, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, shows that were made. The classic Doctor Who made an entirely different time with an entirely different perspective and budget and literal storytelling structure. We let's just start new. And both times, the 1996 television movie and the new series that started in 2005, there was a desire to stay connected to everything that's come before. Doctor Who's kind of special because it's a time travel show. So if there's a little break in continuity, you're going to be like, well,
yeah,
you didn't guess the Doctor kind of messed with time. Like, it doesn't worry too much. Doctor Who kind of plays fast and loose, and there's some fans who really don't like that. But for me, the value of that has been, like we talked about with Star Wars, the emotional continuity to go, the 13th Doctor, who's going through this now, remembers what I do when this happened to the second Doctor. And I remember the first time the Doctor made that decision. And now all these years later, here's the 13th Doctor in a completely different life, kind of questioning that. And it goes to what David was talking about with the sort of the lineage and the value of this sense that maybe we want our stories to be like us, where, like it or not, we are all connected to what has come before in terms of our own family of origin, in terms of the cultural baggage that we grew up with. A sense of lineage and connection is unavoidable in real life. So maybe it's nice to see that mirrored in our storytelling. Ken, how do you feel about that idea of like wanting to feel that rhythm of, I have walked this path and the characters I'm sharing a story with are walking it too?
Yeah. And I like the idea. It's like the show grows with you. The characters grow with you and you grow up with it beyond even just growing up, I guess. You can always grow up. So yeah, no, I like it a lot. That's kind of what I'm drawn to. It's not just the simple facts of this happened on that planet and this thing. It's just that, no, this is an ongoing, and these characters are dealing with the changing world, the changing times, or their own histories, or the history, just like we are. I love that. And again, it's not always possible, right? I like Rings of Power, the series, the Amazon Prime series. It legally cannot connect with other things. So it has these strokes, these kind of broad strokes and things. And I thought it was great because it did speak to the other properties and the source material of the books. It spoke to it. It was communicating with it via the themes. So I'll always, again, edge towards that.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that there is this sense, especially from the big studios, this kind of corporate idea of like, well, what was done in the past is not good. Like, let's make it now. Mm. Let's make it with more budget, special effects, a hot young actor, blah, blah, blah. It's like not understanding that it's those old things in our past, vintage things have value. Like, I don't, as much as I really wanted the new Fraggle show to work, I would have preferred they just kind of remaster the old Fraggles. What was wrong with the old Fraggles, right? I don't know. And I just think about like vintage items, like in terms of clothing and like fast fashion nowadays. It just feels like everything's fast, fast, fast. Let's get the latest, you know, influencer, and we'll put them in this new movie of She's All That, and it's a remake, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but why? Mm. Why? Let's tell something new, right? The only time where I think it works is when you have an adaptation of Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet. Right. And that's because, or like Emma or Pride and Prejudice or Macbeth, because it's now the director or the actor or whatever, their point of view. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is what we've been talking about. Mm. Why are you doing this? What is the point of this story?
Why? Yeah. And I'm going to throw out a correction here because of the canon of Force Center itself. I sometimes do this where I pull the new question and I leave the name of the question asker from the week previous. So we were sitting here having this conversation, and David Litchfield has asked questions before. So I was like, wait, I have the wrong name. The person who asked this question is Brian Thomas. I apologize for saying the wrong name. Were you wondering, Ken? Because like, look, David's asked questions before. What are you talking
it's
about?
It's just how much I trust you, Joseph. Where I read that, and I did at that moment. I was like, well, but I know I've said David's name before. Well, all right. I guess maybe he just tweeted. And
I was thinking about this morning. It's like, I wish Ken and Jennifer didn't have so much faith in me because I make mistakes. They can check my work.
David, good questions in the past. And Brian, you said Brian? Great question.
Brian Thomas. Mm-hmm. Sincere apologies to Brian Thomas. This is such a great question. And we're not done talking about it, but I wanted to correct myself live on air.
There you go.
Thank you, Brian Thomas, for the question. And thank you, David, for the questions in the past. Jennifer, I think you make such a great point, too, of like if somebody announced they were remaking Casablanca, my immediate reaction would be why.
Right.
But then there are stories that do they sort of transcend their time and they become stories of our culture that we tell and retell.
Yes.
And the power of them is in the retelling.
Right.
I don't think. A lot of Jane Austen fans would be upset about yet another Pride and Prejudice because be like, how are they going to tackle Mr. Darcy in this one? Is this scene included?
Right.
You know, is it set in that time period? But they're great shows. Like I enjoy Bridgerton. That's like, it's set in a past time, but it's also like they're practically using phrases like FOMO. It doesn't go that far, but it is like old and modern at the same, like, and nobody, that's fascinating to me of how a story becomes this is in our canon to retell.
Right.
And could something like Casablanca, that I admit I would have a total why, but 100 years from now, could Casablanca be a story like, yeah, we just retell it once every 10, 15 years to get a different take?
I think this question's just, it's going, and maybe beyond what Brian intended of just like, it's an interesting discussion on the industry and what is and what isn't. And you just like Jen's points, your point, Jen, of you know when it's a cash grab, or you know where it's someone in the suit going, wait, what's on this sheet of paper? Oh, we own GoBots. We made a GoBot movie. Go make one. And I think they should hire Joseph to write the GoBots movie.
They wouldn't let me pitch on GoBots. Somebody else had already pitched GoBots. So I ran into that.
Yeah. Me and my friend Jack wanted to reboot Mask. And we, in about 2011, we were working with someone. And like someone was like, oh, no, there's someone else. Someone got here the day before. Frustrating. Jen, I love also the point of it. And Joseph, you tag on it here of you know it when you see it. You know when it's bad. You know when it's maybe a misuse of an existing world, or it just doesn't. Why do that? Connect it to what's there. Star is Born. That's been told three times successfully, right, each time for the times it's in. I agree with you. I don't want a Casablanca remake, but it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities I think it'd be successful versus like a remake of Back to the Future.
Right.
Maybe 50 years from now, we do Back to the Future is remade and it's alive. But I don't want any of these things. But to your point, one of my biggest, I'm a giant fan of the movie Last of Mohicans, Michael Mann, Madeleine Stowe, Daniel Day-Lewis, Jodie May. And that was a remake based on a book, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay if we update it. And you kind of see it. You kind of know it when you know, when it's good or bad or otherwise.
There's a Back to the Future musical, so maybe there'll be Back to the Future the musical that they don't advertise as a musical like they did with Mean Girls, where they don't for some reason try to hide from the audience that it's a musical.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah, the Back to the Future musical. I heard it was playing in Colorado. Casablanca
is about it's a very Han Solo story, which obviously it's the other way around, that Lucas was probably like, yeah, it's a Humphrey Bogart type story of, is he gonna get involved or not with Nazis? We got some Nazis problems now, so you could see that being a really relevant question.
Yeah.
Can you hide out from the problem, or do you get involved?
So what you're saying is time. We need like older films, right? Where people don't have that nostalgia tied to it, really.
It's a fascinating conversation because we all probably have a list of those movies where we'd go, no.
Yeah.
And then other ones we'd go, okay. It's tough for me to even give a full answer, but yeah, I know what you mean.
I think you are touching on something really important too, Jennifer, of like, there is sometimes a feeling when it is more corporate, it's like the old things are icky, of nobody's going to watch that. It's in black and white, so let's just remake it again.
Right.
Because there's mm-hmm. something bad about the old one. And I think right. that's what I like really about like the continuity of Doctor Who, of like, there are people who are just new series fans. There are people who just jumped on with the 13th Doctor. Yeah. And if they want, because that continuity is there, they can go like, oh, go try out that classic Doctor Who. It elevates classic Doctor Who as a different part of this that you can go check out if you want.
Mm.
You don't need to. And so there's less of that like, we need to erase that old bad yeah. one.
Right.
That old
right.
sad one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And make a good one, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which right. I don't like.
I love it. And I just want to be, no one in the comments, don't tweet us. I'm not advocating for a remake of Casablanca. But I will say if it happened, you might be surprised. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
should it be an ongoing story? Casablanca 2. I think that would be even more.
Oh my gosh.
Casablanca 2. See, now you're making me disagree with my own statement up top. Like, oh no, I definitely don't want Casablanca.
What if it's set in modern times and Rick's place is being turned into condos?
See, okay, now you got me back in. You got me back in. I think I want a Casablanca remake more than I'd want Casablanca 2. So my own point at the top of the question is,
it's really difficult. I think the other one of the other facets that I wanted to talk about is the continuing stories. Right now, we have this conversation that I know people have extremely strong feelings about. But the homework label, whether it's true or not, whether you feel it or not, or whether you feel like it's, as people in our comments have said, some people feel like the homework label to MCU is something who. People who don't actually watch MCU feel is true. Mm-hmm, and if you're actually caught up with it, it's, you know, it didn't, I watched them when it came out. What? It's not, yeah, or you don't have to, you can figure it out in context. But mm-hmm. there is that talking point, whether it's true or not, whether it's valid or not, the talking point exists mm-hmm. that a fear of an ongoing story right now is homework, is how much do you have to know to enjoy it? And I think for myself is, as long as I can hook into what's going on with the characters emotionally, I'm fine jumping into an ongoing story. I think comic books back in the day were almost always some level of ongoing story. And you just, it's a totally different world now, but you know, yeah, yeah. they weren't just at comic book stores. It wasn't just collected editions at Barnes & Noble. It was 7-Eleven in that cover looks amazing, and it's the middle of a Spider-Man arc. It's part three of a four-issue arc, and there's little editor's notes, and you know, people our age absolutely got hooked by a dense soap opera with superpowers, mm-hmm. and they found their way through it. And I think the way they found their way through it is because we didn't have a culture of shame.
Mm-hmm.
You ask somebody if you didn't know what was going on with Spider-Man, somebody's older sister did, and they mm-hmm. would tell you, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
and
right.
you would just jump in and you'd get some back issues, or you'd go to the library right. and check them out if you could. And there wasn't this sort of the internet driven. Do I need to go see a movie and then, you know, sit in the corner shamefully looking up what I just saw in an explainer video, you know?
I need that ending explained.
Oh my gosh.
Who's that guy who with the weird thing on his face at the end of the Avengers in 2012? Why does he want to court death? What does that mean? And we've got ourselves sort of tied into knots about the know-it-allness of it, which we've discussed mm-hmm. many times.
Yeah.
But I just think we need to move kind of past that culture of shame, because obviously as a culture we've been able to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
And just jump into the middle of the story. And if it's a fun thing where other people are like, oh, do you want to know? I'll help you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what's interesting? It is going to bat for our Star Wars, Grogu. Mm-hmm. There is no shame around knowing his story, what's happening with him on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. When I go to my kids' elementary school, I see Grogu everywhere. Lunch bags. We found one in the trash. This is story for another day.
Yeah. Story for another time.
T-shirts, water bottles, and there's no like, oh, are you a Star Wars fan? It's just, who doesn't like Grogu? It's so fascinating. It's also why it's so smart that they're now going to have this movie with him, obviously, in theaters, right? But it's just like, there's no shame. Mm-hmm. If you like Grogu, how could you not? Of course you like Grogu. Mm-hmm. Of course you want a T-shirt with his face on it, right? It's so fascinating to me that they were able to get beyond the one thing that's kind of plagued Marvel and Star Wars for a while is like, oh yeah, you're a Star Wars fan. I'm going to quiz you, mm-hmm. right? But with Grogu, there is none of that happening, at least on the playground.
Elementary that's schools. Great. And I think that was the power of that first season of Mandalorian, too. Like, it brought in so many people who were either Star Wars totally new or extremely Star Wars light. I've had so many conversations with people like, I really enjoyed that Mandalorian show. Now, is he actually Baby Yoda, or is that just something right. like I talked to people who right. thought he's like, that's that guy from Empire Strikes Back, real young. Cool. Like, yeah. It didn't stop them from enjoying the show. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. 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 I think the what we've had to deal with the last 10 years, and I say deal, it's been a lot of fun, and I've been part of that stuff too. And I love a good Easter egg, and I love knowing stuff. It's all bad. But yeah, it emerged from that dark era where I think the kids from the 80s playgrounds who had the knowledge now started to hoard it. But also, I love what you're saying, Joseph, too, about that era. Like G.I. Joe comics, I didn't start collecting from issue one on, and I started getting back issues from like my neighbor across the street, and I had like issue 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, 11, 13, 16. I'm not lying. I remember those numbers almost. Oh, I'm sure gosh. I'm missing some of them, but like, and I just had to accept, look at the editor's note or hope Billy told me like,
right.
Why are they in Sierra Gordo? How did they get there? They were underground in Springfield last week. Like, what
yeah. happened? And you know, I think the spirit of some of the explainer videos, I mean, our friend, fans, Alex Somali, Star Wars Explained, the spirit of that is, it's a lot. Let me help you out.
Yeah.
And it is the modern version of Billy on the playground. But I think there's obviously is some gatekeeping. Yeah. And I just think there feels like it seems like something that people are sometimes imposing on themselves, too, of like, can I watch a Marvel movie and go, I totally understood what happened with the main character. Mm-hmm. I was moved by it. I was engaged by it. I don't know who that weirdo was that popped up at the end. Are we able to just go, I engaged with the story, I understood what the characters felt, and who cares whether I recognize that guy painted gold? Right. You know?
Yeah. Right.
I think you're right, where sometimes you know it. You know when maybe there's too much homework or not. But I think for the most part, it the stories are what the stories are, and you got to push past what you feel you don't know, as if that really changes things. I'm a casual Marvel fan, so I'll check in on the MCU every other movie or two movies, or oh, I like Black Widow, I'm gonna watch that movie, and I have to play cat, and they do a good job of filling in the blanks. You don't feel completely lost.
Yeah,
and I think we feel we do.
Yeah, I feel like for me, what happened with the MCU is the initial phases all the way up to Infinity War, people were emotionally invested because the movies were paced at a time that they could get to know Captain America. They could get to know Black Widow, and they were emotionally invested.
Right.
And it isn't so much in the phases afterwards that you need knowledge. It's that the emotional investment isn't there. Because we had one movie with Shang-Chi, and it was, we haven't had a follow-up in a while, and we're not emotionally connected anymore. And to try to get emotionally connected is harder work than it was the first time around.
I think that's a fair point too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good points all around.
That's so many good points. Last thing I want to discuss briefly here, coming out of Brian's question, Jennifer, you brought up just like a hunger for the new. And obviously we have a Star Wars podcast. We love continuing stories. I'm still all in for MCU and Doctor Who. I love things that continue. And I love some remakes that we're talking about. But I do feel a hunger for the new in addition to balance everything. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it goes to what we've been talking about of sometimes feeling for ourselves the difference between some suit somewhere was convinced GoBots would make money. So this it exists and it's kind of soulless versus somebody who's like, I have 8 GoBot tattoos. Here's my new vision. You know, I can make it come to life. The difference between those is just passion. And I think when I say a hunger for the new, it's not like cancel Star Wars, MCU, everything should be new. It's about I want that sort of passion that comes with a new idea, be it a remake or a really fresh take on Star Wars or a fresh take on the Doctor. I just want to really feel passion. And I think there's I feel that in a lot of Star Wars, but a lot of people we talk to don't. They perceive it as all corporate product and don't feel the passion. I do. But I think that's where I'm coming from with new is I want to feel passion. And a part of that means having some balance and having some new things too. Jennifer, what, when you say you want new, what are you thinking or feeling?
That's exactly it. It's why I'm so excited for Leslie Headland's Acolyte, because it is new. I think of Star Wars like a framework, like Shakespeare, because you have these existing kind of saga, right? We kind of, like you talk about the guardrails of what we know will happen in Star Wars, the themes that they deal with. Okay, now creator, bring your own take. How are you going to, what stories are you going to tell? The Master and the Apprentice stories. How can you reimagine that? And that to me gets excited because it's a little familiar. It's obviously a lot of nostalgia for me, but it's in a whole new way. And that gets me really excited. It's why I love Star Wars. I'm continuing to always be delighted by Star Wars, surprised by Star Wars, because they keep adding all these new creators that I'm, you know, fascinated with. So I just love Star Wars so much. Now, if my other beloved properties could catch up, that'd be great. My Little Ponies and Gem and the Holograms.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Ben, are you hungering for the new? Are you feeling too many remakes, reboots, too many stories? Even if you like Star Wars and Marvel, a lot of stories told in the same galaxy. Are you wanting new?
I would struggle with that. I think you kind of touched upon it. I think I get defensive when I hear someone, when I hear anyone just say, because I just got into a text when I say argument, it was a fun, spirited text debate with a friend of mine who lives now out of state. I used to work with him, and he's just like, he's always going to take the time to text me to tell me that the prequel sucked and that the Kenobi series was a cash grab and that there was no passion in any of it. Like he's, and I'm always got to, I fight to refute it. And so I think I associate that with, I want new stuff. Like I don't want to be on a planet I've never heard of, you know, but then when I get to Peridia, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. This feels nice. This feels Star Wars. This can happen. And Acolyte is a great example of, I think it's going to surprise a lot of people because it is brand new and you're going to develop passion for these characters. And it's going to be fun, but it's going to feel so Star Wars. And it's that delicate balance. Again, you see it when you see it, you know it. I think I used to be, if it's Empires versus Rebels, that's what I want to kind of explore, because I think there's a lot to explore there. By the way, I still kind of think that. But now, cool. High Republic did work on me to go, oh, this is another era. Got it. Jedi in a different state. I love this. Okay, let's do it. And I'm ready for that kind of stuff more than I was in the past.
Yeah. I think I'm hungry for new, even in the things I love. I'm hungry for new ideas in Doctor Who. I'm hungry for new ideas in Star Wars. I had ups and downs with Ahsoka, loving much of it, but it opened up to me so much when we went to Peridia, and it's literally like exploring new places, new ideas, all that kind of thing. And I don't want Star Wars or Doctor Who to go anywhere, but I do want the industry to open up, to relax on its fear that IP is the only thing that works, so that there's room for new Star Wars and new Doctor Who to be born. So many conversations become the either or of like the Kylo Ren argument of like, burn it all.
Right.
No more Star Wars. No more Doctor Who. No more Marvel. No more nothing. No more My Little Pony. All new. And I am much more like, the past has value, but we got to make room for the future too. So I want to balance.
Balance.
Yeah.
All right. Great question, Brian. Left us reeling back and forth between My Little Pony and Casablanca 2. That's where you took us on this question. Amazing. Ken, do you want to take us home?
I do. You can follow me and all my thoughts on Casablanca on Casablanca Pod. Coming soon. No, Twitter Casa Talk. Twitter and Threads as Force Center Pod. We're on Facebook as well as Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram as well. And you can find us on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter, as we set up top. Follow me at KenNapsok. Go to my website, KenNapsok.com for all the things I do. Announcing soon, hopefully, as my pop, rock, and radio show, which is still on Mixcloud as it goes into a syndicated form. A couple radio stations have picked it up. So I'll update you all on that exciting news. Jen, where can they find you?
That is exciting. You can find my video essay on Barbie and the Rockers and Gem and the Holograms, which will be out soon, on, where am I? TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138, YouTube and Instagram at Jennifer Landa.
Love that. Joseph, great job today with those questions. And David, thank you again for your questions in the past. Joseph, I fully trust you. Take us home.
I give myself a B minus for this episode because I got the names wrong, and it's like the second time I've done that in the last couple of weeks. Again, my apologies, Brian. You know,
we're moving fast.
And David. Yeah, we're moving fast. I'll work on forgiving myself. I'm going to go live on an island for a little while. And, doubt myself, but that'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. And if you want to check out the newsletter blog, a weekly adventures into the creative process, you can check that out. It's called Finish Your Monsters, and you can find it by just googling Joseph Scrimshaw Finish Your Monsters, or you can go directly to buttondown.email/finishyourmonsters. That is it. We have aid the cues of everything.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.